Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to this breaking news edition of What Most People Think. And it's a breaking news one earlier in the week. We're doing an Ask About Face this week because I'm going to be doing the main episode, hopefully with Romesh, the Christmas special, later. So you're getting the breaking news first. And it is also, look at the dedication here. It's my birthday today. I'm 48 today. 48. That is late 40s. I was clinging on to mid-40s at 47, but 48 is quite clearly late 40s. And my wife woke me up with a bacon baguette today. You know, I forgot it's my birthday for a sec. I was like, hang on, what's gone wrong? When you get woken up with a bacon baguette on a Monday, you're like, hang about, what is it? Are the next word's going to be, we need a new kitchen? I don't know. But yeah, thank you. Many happy, yes, I know, I don't look 48. Thank you. And welcome to new listeners. We are up 40% this year. It's mad. I hope you're enjoying. I hate using the word content because it always... It seems a bit unsexy, that, doesn't it? Content. Like, I'm just sort of providing you with sort of economy range sausage rolls. Oh, by the way, the other night, do you ever feel like sometimes you're not maturing on any level, right? I was away on business there. Made myself feel like Steve Martin in Planes, Trains and Automobiles. But I was away doing a bit of work and I had a Whopper, right, from Burger King, which is nobody's favourite fast food. Can we just say that? Of the Holy Trinity... The Father, McDonald's, the Son, KFC, Burger King is the Holy Spirit. No one really fully understands what it's there for. And I had a Burger King and then I had 2 sausage rolls before going to bed. And I just lay there and I couldn't sleep because my body was going, what are you doing? Are you stoned and back at university? So yeah, 48 years old and resolutely not learning any of life's lessons. Anyway, coming up, we're going to be talking just a bit of politics this week and mopping up some stuff that happened the back end of last week and looking ahead. Rachel from Accounts. You have to admit, right, even if you're a Rachel Reeves fan, that calling her Rachel from Accounts, that is funny. It's quite a funny nickname. And can we just, is it okay if we can call her that without being called sexist as well? It's just funny. It's funny. She made a trip to the EU and some of the right-wing press are also talking about Labour putting together a surrender squad to the EU. You have to admit that the right are just better at doing funny nicknames. Rachel from Accounts, surrender squad. The right are just better. What have the left got for Kemi Badenoch, right? Badenoch. They call her Kemi Bad Enoch. Bad, it doesn't work if you have to slow down to say it. Right, 2 tick here. It's got a trip off the tongue. The right definitely do chants, right? And they do nicknames better. Kemi Bad Enoch. Do you get it? Yeah, I do get it. That's the problem. It was like when Jamie Oliver turned up at the House of Commons. Do you remember when he had... So he was against the government generally, and his thing was that he bought a giant Eton mess because he said it's got a bit Eton messy. And he was explaining it to all these journos again. Yeah, no, we got it the first time, mate. So we're going to be talking about Rachel from Accounts going to the EU and the start of some sort of renegotiation there. And we're going to be talking about immigration. There was good and bad news from the government in terms of their their moves to control and curb immigration. And then talking about Kemi Bad Enoch. we're going to be talking about what the hell does she do for the next 4 years? New patrons. We've also got quite a few new patrons, as well as new listeners. We've got new patrons. And if you are a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And remember, if you want to upgrade yourself to a board member level patron, right, you get a copy, hardback copy of my book, Where Did I Go Right? I will do an inscription of that and I'll send it to your house, right? So you just go on, you get your pledge, you up it to 20 quid. There is no tier. This is all very much behind the scenes stuff, you know, Freemason, weird handshakes, all that sort of stuff. And if you do that, I will send you the book. And for existing board members, I've got a new gift coming up in the new year on top of that. And of course, whenever I do live shows, whether they be work in progress or full tour shows, you can come backstage during the interval, have a chat, get anything signed. Not get anything signed that you want, you know, not your knob. You know, and look, if I can sign my whole name, Jeffrey Norcott, then you'll be doing well on it. So the new patrons are, any patron will get the podcast early, ad-free and with bonus content. We've got Stephen Bailey. There's a comedian called Stephen Bailey. Stephen Bailey. Bailey's. Does anybody drink a bit of Bailey's at Christmas? There you go. Little Christmas cracker joke for you there. And we've got Christoph Fluffington. None of you are giving me real names anymore. Christoph Fluffington. You know what you sound like? You sound like a bad character act that you sometimes get at the Edinburgh Fringe. You'll get an open spot that's basically done about 20 gigs and then they'll book him for a whole month doing a full hour and it'll be some hilarious concept. My name's Christoph Fluffington. I'm the MP for Bridlington Bays. And you can't be, you do know that Labour, the government now. Yes, but we don't know how to do left-wing comedy when the Tories aren't in power. We've got Del Wilson. Del. I think we're... Is this a rejoiner, Del? Well, it's good to have you with us, Del Wilson. Del. Derek. I mean, the difference is... It's like the difference between Jeff and Jeffrey, isn't it? Del. Del's a good... Del Wilson. Del Wilson will get you a fake passport. Derek Wilson just sounds like the kind of put-upon husband in a 70s sitcom. And we've also got somebody joining up calling themselves Tony Blair. Tony Blair. The war criminal. That's what you should have gone with. Unless your name is actually... Tony Blair, in which case you've got a lot to answer for. Domain Talking Point, our super patron, David Domain, that keeps an eye on previous shows and comes back on stats and just little issues to pick up on. David says, I hope you're well. We were talking about how many MPs Labour got with Matt Ford at the last election, in 2019 election, and how that compared to the 121 the Tories have got this time around. So in 2019, Labour ended up with 202, which is slightly less than I thought. I thought it was about 230. That was on a 32% vote share. I mean, that in itself is quite impressive, that 32% of people voted for a government led by Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell, Diane Abbott, that were just throwing free broadband and bank holidays everywhere. So they got 32% vote share. And the Conservatives ended up with 121 this year, which is on a 23.7% vote share. I mean, 23, God, that was fucking shit. Although it's worth saying that that was still higher than a lot of the polls have been predicting. A lot of the polls had them about 19, 20%. Labour have been polling. This is quite quickly forgotten, actually. Labour were regularly polling between 38 and 44% for ages, right? And then the election happens and they got 34%, right? So what happened there? So David goes on to say, I see you've attracted some criticism for Matt Ford again, which I feel has been a bit harsh. For a start, you did challenge him. Yeah, I challenged him here and there. I mean, the point about a mate and a colleague coming on a podcast is that it's not, you know, as you say, David, you know, it's not on the record. We're not politicians. And, you know, when I went on Matt's podcast, I said things that he disagreed with, but he sort of let me speak. But yeah, there was a couple of things that I came back to him on. But I understand that for some people, you know, they really want me to go in there with a finger jabbing thing, which is not really my style, even whether I agree or disagree with people. But people can have their say. David says, to me, your podcast has always been about political conversation that is cordial and tends to the lighthearted. Yeah, I mean, I picked up a few things that I think Matt said about Sue Gray's sort of tried to dismiss the significance of that. I think Matt is a very interesting political thinker, and it was cool to get an idea of where his head was at. And I think his head is very invested in this Labour government, and it's very invested in Starmer. You know, you just want to let that come out. Personally, I think that some of that faith will be misplaced, but who knows, right? It's still very early days on a lot of stuff. Yeah, who knows where we'll be at the end of this Labour government. My personal hunch is the 22 billion black hole might be a lot bigger.
What most people think.
Okay, a quick thank you and a fuck you. The thank you is to Paul Van Dyke. So I went for a bit of a day rave because it's my birthday today. I went out on Saturday, went to a daytime party. First up, hello to numerous people that are podcast listeners that I met there. So I don't know if there's some weird overlap between this podcast and trance music and day raves. And it was, you know what was funny, right? So this was from 5 till midnight, okay, this one. So it's actually quite a late start, believe it or not, for a day rave. And when it kicked out, we actually stayed to the end, which I haven't done for years, and instantly regretted it when the lights came on. Jesus Christ, you know when they talk about the lights coming on at a nightclub? Try doing that when the average age is about 48. And then it was kicking out time. But these venues now, I don't know if you're aware, the nightclubs that are still going, they do a day rave and an evening event. So they essentially got an hour to turn the venue round, tidy it up and stuff. And there was already a big queue of people for the thing that was sort of evidently starting at 1 a.m. because they're young, they've got energy. So the people queuing up were young, and it must have looked so funny to them. They're already standing in a queue, and then suddenly out the door comes this absolute fucking phalanx of fucking tired, spangled, middle-aged people. And I'm suddenly like, what is going on in there? Is this like a meeting for Fathers for Justice or something? There's all these people coming out, and they're like, God, Dad, is that Dad? Is that you? Is that you, Dad? So yeah, that was quite funny. But you know, as I say, I was in bed for about 2 a.m. Got a decent night's kip. But yeah, had a nice filthy pizza when I got back. Had a scotch and coke, and I was in bed. I was in bed and then up and fully functional the next day. This is the thing. People say that hangovers get worse as you get older. I think the physical effects do, but I think you got more mental fortitude. That's the thing. It's mind over matter, or it's issues, or it's alcoholism. I don't know. Maybe there's a point where you love having a drink so much, you've actually just developed the mental strength to push through it. The fuck you is people who get to the front of a queue and then think it's their time to shine, right? So you with me on this? Do you know what I mean by this? So if there's been a long queue, I've noticed this trend that some people, they're so pissed off that they've had to queue for this long. When they get there, it's like, right, I'm going to take my time. Okay, it's my time. I've waited. I'm not going to be rushed. You go, that's the reason the queue took longer, is because of people like you. I was in this post office queue the other day. Fucking hell, Jesus Christ. It is. I mean, first up, fair play to anybody that's sending a Christmas card this year. At £1.45 for a first class stamp. I mean, it's the new flex, isn't it? It's like when people fill up with super unleaded. You remember, you know, the height of the petrol price, you go, oh, someone's doing all right for himself. If someone sends you a Christmas card, they're literally waving their money dick in your face. But every time, and it was, I would say, look, it was more of a problem with the lady folk. We already know this, you know, at cash points, women, they only really remember that they need to get their stuff out of their bag at the point where they get... I suppose that they would say they're worried about getting mugged and stuff like that. I think that makes more sense when they're in public. But Jesus Christ, like, right, okay, I'm going to get my stuff out of here. I'm going to get to it. Just fucking get on with it. Oh my God, I was in this queue 45 minutes. I was ready to kill. And then the woman said, when I got to the front, the woman said to me, oh, you could have just got a bunch of first class stamps in this and put it straight in the post. So thank you very much. Okay, right, let's talk about a bit of politics, and we'll start with Rachel from Accounts and her little trip to Europe. So in the middle of last week, Rachel Reeves, she went to the EU to cultivate people. That was the idea, that she's setting the... laying the tracks for a bit of a reset of relations with the EU. I mean, the idea of Rachel Reeves cultivating anybody is a bit hard to fathom. I mean, her whole vibe is being cross, isn't it? She sort of looks, she permanently looks like someone who's just stepped on a plug. Who left that there? Look what you made me do. That's the other thing with Rachel. A lot of her stuff is she's doing this stuff, but it's because you made her do it. You made mummy cross. And Labour are doing a reset. They've done a reset with themselves. They're doing a reset with the EU. And she said that it had gone very well, you know. It had all gone very well. But apparently no demands were made or negotiations took place. So I don't know what went well. I don't know what. They just had some nice canapes, you know. They just, maybe the people from Europe were just glad that it wasn't a Tory. But she also said that negotiations on a new trading relationship would begin in the new year, which proves my point that nobody at any level thinks December is a reasonable month to do any work, right? Everyone's going like, can we circle back to this in January? Can we circle back to this in January? And I'm like, no, I need my toilet unblocked now. Not all things can be circled back to. It is funny, though. There is some stuff Labour are doing where they're trying to make out that they're the first ones to do it. We're gonna be the first ones to reset this relationship with the EU. And I sort of think, well, I think Rishi, you know, whatever you think of the Windsor framework, that was seen broadly as the start of that process. There is some stuff that Labour are claiming. Like I saw one of their backers, that Dale Vince guy, had sent a chart showing the rise in contribution of renewable wind electricity, right? And he was like, look, this Labour government, they repealed the ban on offshore wind farms. Look what's happening. You go, none of that is part of these statistics, mate. Everything for the last 14 years is the Tories' fault, apart from the good stuff. And that's Labour, right? So I get it, it's political, but it can become a bit tedious. So if there is going to be an improved relationship, it will be because we want something from them, they want something from us. And we know from experience that the EU, you know what's happened is the EU, they've kind of had to dish out their punishment beating to us to deter any of the other nations, like some sort of mafia family. Hey, you want to leave the family? Look what we did. Yeah. What you did was a bunch of stuff that arguably harmed everybody, but I get it. You don't want anyone else to leave. But what will the trade-off be? What will the trade-off be? And a lot of people are talking about that the EU want freedom of movement for young people. Now, on one level, it doesn't seem like a big ask. It seems like a moral thing. You go, yeah, maybe we could give them back. It's almost like, on the face of it, it's like when you're moving house and they go, right, we can complete in 30 days, okay? But, and this is a big but, we need the blinds that are up in your house. What, the blinds that were bespoke made for this house? Yeah, you can fucking have it. But the question is that a backdoor to something else? Is that a backdoor to something else? But then, the pro-EU rejoin people are like, well, we need to be back in the single market so we could have a free trade agreement. I do think that some people are forgetting that I'm pretty sure that we do have that. Hang on, let me just quickly check. Right, yeah, the UK-EU free trade agreement. It provides for zero tariffs and zero quotas on all goods that comply with the appropriate rules. Right, so I think that there's some customs element to it, and I think there's a VAT thing. But ostensibly, we did get a free trade agreement in the end. And, if you were to go in the single market, then you'd get freedom of movement. And I know that people would say, well, the immigration we've had since that stopped has been higher, but there still remains the point that with freedom of movement, you just don't know. I mean, this is the point, is the Tories are responsible for the levels of immigration that we have because they issued that many visas. The difference with freedom of movement is you've got no idea. You've got no idea. It could be 200,000 one year, it could be 700,000 the next year. You can't actually manage it on any level. And that's not to say that the Tories made a success of immigration because they failed in so many ways, but freedom of movement is a different thing. Now, vets, I mean, I think anybody would say maybe we could get an agreement on vets because I don't know if you've had your animal treated for anything recently, but fucking hell, mate, they just quote what they want. They're like plumbers plus because they know, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? You have a dog walking around with a gammy leg. It's like, what would you want? Again, it's like, shake that. What do you want? You want a dog with a gammy leg or are you going to put it down? Because otherwise, I think you got to fucking pay. Yeah, if my dog gets ill again, it'll be like, it'll end up like the character in Breaking Bad. She'll have to start dealing meth just to pay for our own treatment. But yeah, what could we offer them? What could we offer the EU other than any kind of freedom of movement? I think we could offer them music and comedy. Now, it's no disrespect to our friends on the continent. Culturally, opera, ballet, cooking, food, cuisine, great. Music and comedy, I'm going to say that we've got the edge here. I'm going to say we've got the edge. We should use like Stormzy and Dua Lipa as a bargaining chip. Because you don't have that, all right? You just don't have that. No Harry Styles for you. No Kevin Bridges or Michael McIntyre DVDs. We could also promise that we'll stop thinking that us talking slower is the same as knowing their language, okay? We'll actually learn a few words of German rather than going, hello, I'm just going to keep speaking slowly until you take pity on me and start speaking back in English. So, yeah, the right-wing press have had a bit of fun with the talk of the surrender squad there. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What will Labour do? Will there be a bunch of backdoor deals where it slowly gets unpicked over time? Or will there be a big key marquee thing like freedom of movement? We'll see. But then the next thing, the big thing is immigration, right? For some reason, I can't say that without wanting to do the Roy Castle tune from Dedication. Immigration is what you need. I mean, the Tories could have sung that with those numbers. If you want to be the best, immigrate. We are record breakers, i.e. record number of people entered the country. Now, Labour are under pressure on this because the Tories will push them. Reform will push them arguably even harder. All of which makes it even stranger on reflection that caps or targets or milestones were left out of the recent Labour reset. And they've tried to equivocate here and go, look, it's just, we don't think it's appropriate. The really important thing here is to tackle it at its root cause. You go, But then why were targets important for anything? You, by setting targets or milestones, you've acknowledged the importance of targets or milestones. You're now saying this is really important, but you're not going to. Is it? You're not going to do that. Is it because it's hard, perhaps? Maybe it's harder for Western democracies in 2024 than you're letting on. So you're sitting there saying, yeah, the Tories have failed. They operated an experiment in open borders. No, the point was arguably worse, Keir, is that it wasn't open borders. It's that they said they were going to bring immigration down and then issued loads of visas and didn't really explain why, right? Obviously, there was an influx of people from Ukraine and Hong Kong and Afghanistan, but also there were a lot of visas issues. So it's not open borders. It's more deliberate than that. Now, there is some good news here, is that the rise in deportations is at a five-year high. Now, some of it, so well done to the government on this, you know, some of it is voluntary, it must be said, but also the forced deportations have gone up. So they've done what they said they were going to do there. But one thing you do wonder is where are the lefty lawyers stopping flights now? I mean, I'm sure there are still some knocking about, but if there's been a rise, have they just become less effective? Or, and this is controversial, that they might be slightly less motivated to act than under a Labour government than a Tory one. I'm just throwing it out there. Any lefty lawyers want to get in touch and explain to me why? Or if the government just tightened up their processes, that these flights are harder to challenge. I genuinely don't know. What's that, Jeff? You're talking about? You're talking freely on a subject you're only partially informed on? Yeah, that is pretty much the point of the podcast. But they have to act, right? The Labour Party have to act. People, when you look back, right, to 2010, like 2010, the Tories were saying, what was it, Cameron? It was going to be in the tens of thousands. That seems optimistic looking back. But people have repeatedly voted for parties that have stood on this platform, right? One way or another, if you throw in Brexit as well, people have repeatedly expressed a desire to slow, curb, restrict immigration and illegal immigration. Now, it should also be said that as much as the government have had some success in deportations, when you look at people arriving on boats, I think it's higher. I think that's gone up for this period when Labour have been in. It has gone up. So 34,880 illegal migrants have arrived in small boats. That's 20% more than last year, right? So there is some talk there that taking away the Rwanda deterrent, right? It always seemed a bit crazy, the Rwanda thing, but maybe there was some deterrent in that. So that is an area where they're very cautious about putting any caps or targets on that because it's hard. But yeah, we're gonna smash the gangs. We're gonna absolutely smash them. It's so weird that Starmer, on that phrase, he says something way more active than on other stuff. He's really boring. His language is boring around everything. But when it comes to gangs, we've got to smash the gangs. I reckon he won't smash the gangs. And in the end, what he'll revert to. Do you remember that weird thing before the election where he was talking about the smell of cannabis on the streets? I reckon he's going to go, we're going to smash the smells that blight Britain. He'll just take on, smells. But they've got to act, Labour, right? As people have repeatedly voted for this one way or another. So Yvette Cooper, she goes to Europe to meet Giorgia Meloni, the head of, is she Prime Minister of Italy? Queen of Europe at the moment, right? Because the French have got their problems, the Germans have got their problems. And so there we are. We have like all these world leaders who are into Giorgia. Because like, you know, she's a working class lady. She has a fag when she's out and about. She has a drink. This is what we want from our politicians now. We just need to know that they have vices, mainly. How far does that go? Because people love it with Nigel, don't they? That he has a fag and a pint. What if you threw in another thing there? He's like, he had a little amphetamines habit. Yeah, I just like a fag and a pint and a little dab of speed. just to keep you up. It helps with the drinking. It's good for an all day. It's a good session, amphetamine. It must be weird, though, right? Because you still have progressive Labour voters, right, that maybe held their nose a bit with some of their fears about the Labour Party and voted Labour at the last election. But Labour are very much on the Tories' lawn on a lot of issues. But who's on the progressive lawn now, right? What are those people thinking when they see that? A Labour Home Secretary with a Prime Minister of Italy who comes from a party that a lot of people said their roots are in the far right. I don't think that's where they are now, but that's where politics has moved. So will those voters, I said this at the last election, you know, when you look at what Labour were polling against what they got, right, like we say, anything between 38 and 44%, they got 34%. So did eventually was Labour's left flank exposed? Because if the Labour are sort of trying to take on reform and the Tories are trying to take on reform, you could eventually, especially at local council elections, you could see a lot of would-be Labour voters ending up with the Greens, or in Scotland, ending up with the SNP. And of course, if that happens, the SNP, they won't just see that is a protest vote. The SNP will go, this is quite clearly a mandate for another independence vote. Okay, we're going to talk about Kemi Bad Enoch. Bad Enoch. Surely if you were Bad Enoch, you'd be bad at being Enoch, which would mean you weren't racist, right? So they really need to rethink their nickname there. So there is chuntering around the corridors of Westminster about Kemi Bad Enoch. Bad Enoch. No, it's Bad Enoch, isn't it? There's chuntering about everything now. I do think we generally live in a political cycle that cannot accept that just, you know, some you've got to give things time. But She's had a few PMQs now where she makes odd decisions. She asks two questions in one, right? So one of them often is a difficult question and the other one sort of gives Starmer a chance to pop off about something, which is really unwise. But when it comes to PMQs, I now wonder if she's even whether she even cares about whether or not she wins in the chamber, because it's very difficult to do that when you're up against 400 MPs plus the Lib Dems, right? So maybe she just wants the clips of her saying stuff. But anyway, I think there's a challenge. I think is there one more PMQs before Christmas recess? But whatever the next one is, or if it's a Christmas one, this would work particularly well, is I think that she should say to Starmer, she should say, look, right, I'm going to start PMQs now, but my first question is this. Will you accept this Christmas challenge? Is that for these six questions, that you do not use any of your bingo card of phrases, right? So 14 years, 22 billion, fixing the founder, all of that stuff. If you can get through six questions, I'll give 10 grand to a charity of your choice, right? And see if he takes that. Because I guess the option there would be then that he either like misses the opportunity and goes, well, that's because I'd understand why they want to talk about the last 14 years. And then so immediately he looks petty and not in the Christmas spirit. And then if he accepts it, it kind of proves just how much he relies on it. Because if you strip out all of that in the PMQ's answers, there's very little of substance that this man says. He does not like being pressed on the detail. So if if any of her advisors are listening, just a bit of Christmas fun. It would be interesting to see what he does. The thing is, even if he took up the challenge, I bet you for the force of habit. I mean, he kept on calling Rishi Sunak the Prime Minister for the first three PMQs after the election. Well, the questions about her, I suppose, is that she said, look, you know, there were mistakes made in the Tory government, really? And that she's going to be in listening mode for the next... there's a consultation going on. And I totally understand that. Starmer did a lot of that in the early years. Well, having said that, he did have his leadership pledges that he just completely revoked. But you don't want to be a hostage to fortune as much as possible, right? Problem is that if she's in listening mode, reformer in talking mode, right? Reformer talking about everything. And reform can say a lot of stuff without any expectation of delivery in government for now, right? You would say that even if reform absolutely stormed their way at the next election, they might be the second biggest party, right? Just because of the way our electoral system works and the way that votes will operate in the South and particularly the Southeast. So they can say, you know, what they want. And that is, that is one of Farage's strengths and also a criticism. Is he's great at telling you what's wrong and what is a joke. You know, it's an absolute joke. It's an absolute failure. It's a farce and a shambozzle. You know, but he's a lot of diagnosis and the prescriptions that he does offer, you know, they're in their manifesto for the last election, they were talking about net zero migration, right? You know, there are a lot of people that would support that. The practicalities of delivering that. I think they then caveated it for nurses, doctors, you know, so effectively it wouldn't be. But they can get bold policy ideas out there because they face less scrutiny, right? And Farage himself, he's very skillful at just picking the right issues to get coverage on. So I think that there was a training thing at the House of Parliament for harassment and bullying. And Farage has been out calling it woke nonsense, absolute woke nonsense. I'm going to have a fag and a pint and some speed. But you go, all right, I sort of get the DEI stuff. You could call it woke nonsense. I wonder if harassment and bullying is just a thing that's been around for a while. And what makes it harder for him, I suppose, is that four of his MPs did attend this training, including Richard Tice and Lee Anderson. So you kind of go, Are they buying into the woke nonsense? I suppose you could say Lee Anderson, that he just went to fucking... You know, like when you go for one of those driver training things, when you get points and you attend a seminar to not get the points. And you'd always get one guy there that's just there to go, oh, it's absolute bollocks. This is absolute bollocks. I get done for 35 mile an hour. They're fucking rapists out there. So I would imagine that maybe he went there to shit on it. You know, maybe he was looking for tips. I genuinely, Lee Anderson on a harassment and bullying course would have been worth the admission fee alone. But it's hard because, you know, unless the Tories were skewered, in inverted commas, by their own targets on migration. So the thing that they really need to do is say bold things on migration, but that is the thing that got them in trouble before. You know, and then you're down to, like, the things that Kemi is getting coverage for. Is she's done some interview in The Spectator where she spoke about her feelings on sandwiches, which did actually spark a national debate. I mean, her view was that sandwiches, she said they weren't a breakfast food. And I was thinking, I don't think many people do eat them for breakfast. But then she went on to reveal that she also used the word moist about sandwiches. She said they're not moist enough. And even now, I know that there'll be particularly female listeners recoiling from the moist word, because in some ways it's the M word, isn't it? People just don't like that word. All right, I'll stop saying it. But she also said that she eats steak at her desk for lunch. I thought, that is such a power play, isn't it? I mean, don't want to go back to The Sopranos once again, but that was the thing that Tony Soprano used to do during business meetings, which is such a power play to sit and continue eating while someone comes to sit down and tell you something. It is the idea. I mean, it's a real macho move, isn't it? To just sit there eating steak. Like, she's basically outmanning everybody in that room. It's really emasculating. I think this is the problem with the Tories. You know, the Tories are in a fight with reform, but reform needs to stay ahead of the Tories on the right wing stuff. So I think Farage has now got to say that he eats veal. I like some veal for breakfast. I eat veal for breakfast. I eat it while it's still moving. You know, they just end up in a sort of game of meaty top trumps. So I think that, you know, it's early, too early to make a judgment on Kemi overall. She's got time, but she has. I don't think anyone's that impressed yet. But I also, it's really unclear. She's in a bit of a bind. You could argue that it's a bit of a hospital pass generally. It's a terrible time to become Tory leader in the slipstream of a terrible general election result that was born off the back of the public being angry with the party. So this is still the period where the public are angry with the party. You look at everything that is in Keir Starmer's favour, everything he's won in politics, you know, this majority, you know, all the power, how much easier it is at PMQs is because of how the people felt let down by the Tories. So that's got to come out in the wash. But yeah, I do think that maybe, you know, she's certainly got to improve her performance at PMQs and, you know, make headlines for stuff other than sandwiches. Okay, that is the end of this breaking news edition of What Most People Think. Don't forget, there will be a Christmas special later in the week, hopefully with Romesh. We're still trying to hook that up, but there'll be another episode later this week regardless. It does give me an opportunity to read out, like, if you leave 5-star reviews on iTunes, I'll read them out. So we've got Gunnar Ramones, we've got an Arsenal fan. Arsenal fan. Always get a laugh from this. And the latest breaking news, Starmer's gallstones, was one of the best, with several laugh out loud moments. Yeah, thank you. This is from Ants Gill. Forget your political stance. Jeff Norcott is entertaining and funny, no matter which side you're looking at it from. Thank you. That's what I always say. Okay, those are the recent two ones. Thank you to people that read them on Spotify, leave them on Spotify. I still haven't yet worked out how to do it. And listen, with Christmas coming up, if you're a bloke, we generally get shit presents. So if you like what I do, remember the books are out there. Just tell your missus, your other half, the kids. I don't want any fucking socks. I want some. Oh, and I could get you a Patreon membership. You know what I mean? There's an idea, a little gift idea. Look at me hawking myself at the end. Yeah, look, Christmas is coming up and my wife likes nice things. I need the fucking money.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.